Hello everyone, and welcome to the Actors Podcast, a bi-weekly program dedicated to bringing you closer to the difference makers in CDI and sharing the latest news relevant to the CDI profession and Actors. My name is Rebecca Hendren and I am the Director of Actors. I'm also your host for today's program, and I am joined by Actors' newest team member, Jessica Vaughan, and we're going to discuss outpatient CDI. Jessica Vaughan, DNP, RN, NEA, BC, CCDS, CCDSO, CRC, just joined the team as a CDI specialist for Actors and HC Pro, creating and teaching our education, including boot camps, e-learning, and Propel member services, as well as being a subject matter expert for Actors. Jessica is a seasoned registered nurse with 28 years of clinical experience and 14 years progressive healthcare leadership, including CDI across both inpatient and ambulatory settings. Jessica pioneered some of the nation's earliest CDI education and ambulatory programs, focusing on risk adjustment and value-based care. Prior to that, she led inpatient CDI initiatives focused on alignment with quality measures and developed CDI educational programs for interdisciplinary healthcare teams. She is a nationally recognized speaker and author, and she has contributed to conferences, publications, and CDI resources, including the original Actis Outpatient Study Guide, CCDSO Certification Exam, and the 2024 and 2025 Actis Outpatient Pocket Guide. She earned her doctorate in executive leadership from Duke University in 2022. Jessica is a passionate advocate for CDI professionals, committed to integrating them into interprofessional teams to enhance patient care. Now, before we get started, a quick update before I get into my conversation with Jessica. In response to Actis member feedback, we have updated our CEU period for listeners, hoping to claim the 0.5 Actis CEU for each episode. You now have until 11 p.m. Eastern on the Sunday following an episode's release to claim your credit, which is a full 2 days more than previously when the CEU cutoff was on Friday night. As a reminder, you can use that 0.5 Actis CEU for today's episode for recertifying your CCDS or CCDSO credential. As usual, I will share the instructions on how to claim your credit at the end of today's show, so stay tuned for that. Well, thank you so much for joining me, Jessica, for your first podcast as a part of the Actis team. I'm so excited to have you here with me today.
Well, thank you, Rebecca, for having me.
So we're going to get started with my questions. And the first topic I'm going to ask about is HCCs. So what would you say are some of the most common HCC opportunities in outpatient documentation? And why do you think they're overlooked?
Yeah, that's a great question to start with. I think some of the biggest misses are, of course, chronic conditions. When we think of HCCs, we think mainly chronic conditions. There are some acute as well, but we tend to think of some of the ones I think we miss, we tend to think of them clinically as needing to be addressed by a specialist versus a primary care physician, like types of heart failure, CKD staging, diabetic complications, and of course, many of our behavioral health diagnoses. I've also noted that solid tumors get a lot of discussion. Those things such as breast cancer, prostate, or lung cancer, I think it's because those things are oftentimes difficult for a few reasons, right? One is because clinicians may assume that the history carries forward or that the problem list is enough. And that's just a simple education issue, right? Like, okay, well, that doesn't happen. We know that for risk adjustment conditions, they have to be assessed yearly if they're still being monitored, evaluated, assessed, or treated. They have to be documented every calendar year and coded to be recognized by the payer. But also, since most of our ambulatory CDI tactics and strategies live in primary care, clinically, some of these diagnostic specificities, we'll call them, are difficult just to get accurately assessed in the EHR, and rightly so oftentimes, right? Because primary care physicians are like, well, this isn't, they should, you know, go to your endocrinologist or go to your oncologist. And I think this is why education is so important.
Oh, absolutely. So how do you approach educating providers on the importance of capturing chronic conditions annually?
Yeah, I like to frame it around patient safety and care continuity first, then compliance. We don't typically frame it around finances at all when we're talking to physicians that face the patient. Obviously, there is a conversation to be had there with your finance and your CFO office. But for our physicians that face the patient, we need to show them that accurate documentation drives things such as care coordination, closes care gaps, and really prevents this payer misrepresentation that we may see and prevents denials. And I know we talk a lot about that in inpatient, probably not as much as we should in ambulatory. So the examples that I like to provide are things such as visual helps. I think providing good catches or showing the physician a missed care gap example makes a difference in real time. I like to keep it simple but relevant. If you address it, you document it. So sometimes we can ask, what did you tell the patient? I like to say that. Well, if you told the patient, because of our EHR transparency that we have now, the patient's going to see it in the documentation. So why not document it like you spoke to the patient? And we have some IT tools for that as well, right? So I think if it's documented, or if it's stated, document it as it's stated. And lastly, I would say use the help me understand conversation. Physicians love to learn. They love to educate. We should also have that, you know, that learning sort of mindset with them as well.
Absolutely. That's a very good point. I'm going to switch now because we've had a lot of questions about E&M documentation. So let's talk about the 2023 E&M guideline changes and how have they or are they affecting CDI strategy?
Yeah, so I will be the first to admit that I am not the E&M expert. A lot of our programs don't focus on E&M. I think most do focus on HCCs, and I think either is okay. There were some changes since COVID happened that has shifted how we teach E&M coding, in my opinion. And that shift was to medical decision making over time, right? So now I think CDI focuses less on counting those bullet points and more on the complexity of the problems. What was the data that was reviewed? And then what's the risk? I think we have to coach clinicians to just clearly state their thought process, what they considered, what they rolled out, and the why. Clinicians should see that good documentation drives quality care, right? We should be able to show that. But we should also see that it's accurate data, supports revenue, regardless of coding settings. So regardless of whether you have an HCC focus or an E&M focus, then we should be able to explain to the physicians and the APCs that the thought process is what we're trying to capture. And I think that's what they're trying to do with these newer E&M rules.
That's very interesting. So what documentation habits do you see that can lead to undercoding or overcoding E&M levels?
So I've experienced that undercoding happens more often because clinicians really want to do the right thing. And quite frankly, they've been sort of talked to a lot about coding, right, and about compliance. But I think they're scared a bit to overcode, right? They want to be compliant. Like I said, they want to do the right thing, but they need help getting that documentation secured for accurate coding. When clinicians don't capture the complexity of those conditions or they omit the rationale, then we have things such as undercoding, right? And like I said, I think that happens more often just because they are more concerned for overcoding. Overcoding, I've seen, comes with the copy-paste, copy-forward that we now see in our EHR. So unfortunately, this causes irrelevant data and it can inflate risk without documentation to support it. So again, oftentimes this is done to ensure that the clinician isn't missing anything, right? Let's pretend like I'm a hematologist. I see this a lot in hematology oncology, the physicians writing everything they've had as far as their cancer diagnoses for the last 3 or 4 years, and that just gets copied and pasted forward. And our coders understand that, yeah, we can't really take that, right? So it also causes a problem on the coding side of what really matters for this visit. And in ambulatory, that's what it is, right? It's this point of care, this visit, this CPT code. So when we overcode, all this copy and pasting can really be problematic for the health system and the physician because it can be seen as non-compliant. Both can be fixed by just focusing on that accurate, concise medical decision-making for that day and that place of service.
So then what's your advice for providers who may struggle with documenting medical decision-making clearly?
Well, when I was in MP school, we often used to say, think out loud in the note, right? What's the main problem? And then what did you do about it? Did you assess it? And then place it in the note. Now, a simple structure for that is assessment plan why. That can go a long way, right? So my advice to providers, clinicians are just, what did you assess? What did you plan to do? And why did you do it? It sounds simple for someone like me or a CDI specialist who's not sitting with the patient at the point of care. But with that, we need to factor in the added administrative burdens that we have on our physicians and APCs nowadays, the time and difficulty of technology. So, you know, therefore, you really have to build IT tools to help with this process. So, again, it's easy for us as CDI specialists to say, here's what you do, assess, plan, and why. It's just not as easy when you have 15 minutes with a patient.
So I'm going to move on to some topics around collaboration and education. So we've touched on this a little bit. How do you build those strong relationships with outpatient providers so that you can support documentation improvement?
That's a great question. And I think it's a strategy that may look different depending on what type of organization you're in. I think it could look different, you know, if you're in an academic setting to where you have a lot of residents eager to learn, they're taking in everything, yet they're also overwhelmed. Or if you have, you know, seasoned private clinicians, private providers who are like, you know, I've done this for years and this is how I do it. And I've had both. So I would say that you have to start by listening with the intent to learn. Again, that learning attitude, that learning mindset. So I know me, I'll speak for myself. I'm typically quick to fix rather than focus, right? I want to slap a Band-Aid on it and I want to figure out the why and fix it. That's not always what we need to do to build relationships, right? So if we are fixers, then oftentimes this causes a downstream effect before we address the upstream problem. So I think my advice would be sit with your clinicians, whether they're inpatient or outpatient for that matter. Do it inpatient if you can, if you can grab them while they're just charting, or, you know, in ambulatory, if you can, you know, ask to shadow them. Ask what slows them down. Find out what feels like a burden to them when it comes to their clinical documentation. Then you can start to offer solutions that save them time. You probably already know it in the back of your mind, right? But again, have that learning attitude, because then I think you can offer things like templates, quick tips, and EHR shortcuts. I always say we have to be helpers, not hinderers, because if we're seen as a partner, not an auditor, right, then our engagement will skyrocket.
That makes a lot of sense. So what role does CDI play in bridging the gap between coding, compliance, and clinical care when it's in the outpatient or ambulatory setting?
First, I would say that the documentation integrity speaks for itself, just the words, right? I love the fact that we changed that a few years back from documentation improvement. I still hear documentation improvement some,
yep,
right? I'm sure you do
yep,
too.
I do.
But as far as documentation integrity, I think, you know, it speaks for itself. Everyone wants to be a person of integrity. We want to be clinicians of integrity. We want to be, you know, just professionals of integrity. When it comes to EHR documentation, CDI is really the bridge. They are the translator. I always say we know enough to be dangerous, right? We know enough about clinical and enough about coding that we can help. So that's how we need to be seen, again, to the previous point. But we connect clinical thought process with compliance and coding guidelines. So the record then reflects the reality of the patient care. And I know we've said this for years, right? You know, reflect the clinical picture. I think it still bears saying we help protect you. We help protect the physician. We help protect the organization or whomever we're, you know, educating or trying to form these processes for, right? So we want to protect the clinician, the patient story. That's what really needs protecting in our world today with, again, these administrative tasks that come with the EHR and with more rules and regulations. And of course, revenue is part of that. And then I would add in quality metrics, which should secure data integrity as well.
Fantastic. So what educational tools or tactics have you found most effective for outpatient CDI training?
Yeah, you have to use adult learning principles, right? And that looks a lot different for adults than, well, again, it could look a lot different depending on if you've got young adults versus older adults. There's a ton of research on this, and I would suggest you find the tools that work best for your organization. Again, there's a ton of tools out there, a ton of different research that's been done, real research, and I think you can really find those things that solidify how you should do it. But what I've witnessed is that macro, we talk a lot about micro learning. So let's talk about macro for a minute. The macro learning as an introduction, that helicopter view of what documentation integrity is, what it provides, I think that lays the groundwork for your micro learning. So I would say take the macro learning, probably peer-to-peer. It probably does feel best and come across best if it's done by a physician or a nurse practitioner, someone who has the street credit, right? To say, here's why we're telling you to do this. Here's why we're partnering. We're asking you to do this. And then move into your micro learning, which then works best for continued and improved understanding, right? Your short videos, your tip sheets, your real case examples. And of course, I would just a short caveat on using case examples. Some organizations don't like to use real case examples for physicians. I would definitely make sure that your compliance and legal team is understanding of what you're doing and they support that, because I know, you know, some organizations take different thoughts on that. So, but I think real case examples mean a lot, especially if it's a physician who, hey, this was your patient. Let's talk about how, show me what you thought here, and then I'm going to show you what it turned into code-wise, and we're going to see if, you know, we can just educate on what may be better in the future to do, more compliant and show the picture that you're trying to show. I think using EMR embedded education also works well. I know that's a little hard. Sometimes clinicians just don't want that, right? But then some folks, I would say those who are technology native, probably like this best in their workflow, right? They don't want to sit in the classroom. They just want it right in front of their face while they're doing it. So I think one example of this, kind of like this podcast, Rebecca, is a TED Talk, right? I love watching TED Talks. I don't know if I can say that. You might have to edit that out. but so a TED Talk is a short version, right? 15 to 18 minutes. They offer a wealth of information that typically an adult can retain, you know, that 15-minute video. And then, you know, I think that a case example is an imperative again. But I think we can really improve the outcome of what you see daily in the documentation if we focus on both the macro, the, hey, here's a 45 minutes, you have to do this once a year, and then the micro little tidbits that you can get throughout the year.
That's such good advice. Thank you. How are you leveraging technology, whether that's things like a prompt in your EMR or an AI tool to support outpatient CDI?
Yeah. I could talk a lot about this. I have, and I'm sure I know, you know, there's a lot of discussion about this in the industry, in every industry, right? AI is a game changer in CDI, as it is in many. I think many EMRs now use real-time alerts for care gaps, chronic condition recapture, and AI tools that flag suspect conditions or draft queries. Those are gaining traction. And I think we could spend a whole podcast on arguing what AI is, what NLP is, you know, and what really works and what doesn't. I think the key is governance. AI should streamline workflows and support clinical reasoning, not replace critical thinking or judgment. One concern is that most of our current tools focus on point of care prompts, which often add clicks to the physician instead of reducing them. And I think we're missing the mark there, right? These tools really need to make documentation and decision-making more efficient, not harder. I think what's missing is a true CDI tool that prioritizes records that need a human review. AI should scan the entire population, identify charts with ambiguity, and then surface those for our CDI specialists so that we spend time where the expertise matters the most. We can use those human thinking skills, that real set of eyes, to go, oh yeah, this is what this means. And I think I need this clarity from the point of care physician.
I love that perspective. That's really interesting.
And I could go on and on.
I know. And we could talk about this for a whole podcast. And I'm going to ask you about something that, I mean, most of us think about this is, do you see a future where outpatient CDI becomes more automated? And so what role will CDI specialists play at that point?
I see a future where the fundamentals of ambulatory CDI become more automated. I think the automation will handle things like repetitive tasks, that suspecting and routing. Hey, the patient has had chronic congestive heart failure now for 3 years. They've been on this. There's no reason that a CDI specialist needs to look at that chart, right? That's the automation I think that will happen. I think it will allow CDI specialists to move out of the box more and to use their skill set for even a broader set of things that are valuable to the health system. And I've seen this in real life with some of the programs I've led. The CDI specialists still need to perform a clinical validation. They'll still need to perform education. They'll still need to do QA. They'll still need to look at compliance, all of those things. I don't think that the AI is going to take over. I think technology is a tool, and then humans have to provide that context. AI, in my opinion, will augment the CDI workflow, but that governance and clinical oversight will remain essential to CDI.
That's a very interesting answer. Thank you. What metrics or KPIs do you personally track to measure success in outpatient CDI?
That has also changed over several years. I think just because we have seen this expansion, right? Ambulatory CDI is no longer new to the industry.
Right.
A lot of organizations struggle with it. And we, you know, the ones I've been at still struggle with it to a point. But, you know, they're very different. You know, now we see very advanced ambulatory CDI programs. I mean,
absolutely.
We heard some of those at ACTIS this year, which just kind of blew my mind a little bit.
Well, I think you spoke at the first ACTIS Outpatient Symposium, which was all the way back in 2017, which is getting on for a while ago now.
I may have. I probably need to look that up and see what I said. And I may be saying some contradictory things. And if it sounds that way, it's because we've evolved, right? So over the last 7, 8, 10 years, I used to say that, oh, we need this query rate, right? Because I was taught, you know, CDI is paid to ask questions. And I still think there's a piece of that, right? We do question things that are ambiguous and those things in the chart. But as far as ambulatory, the chronic condition capture rate year over year is important. That's an easy one to capture. You can do that in most EHRs. So if we don't put all of those conditions in a recapture, right? I mean, you, like I said, most of these are chronic, but a lot of them can be in remission now. And we're seeing this with these new codes for things that we've said, oh, these are chronic, but now we have a remission for diabetes, you know? So it's interesting how we've changed both clinically and in coding over the last several, you know, just 10 years. So that chronic condition recapture rate year over year, we have to have that. We have to know that, because if we're missing those, then we truly are missing diagnoses on patients, right? That's an easy grab. The query response turnaround, I think, is important, because in ambulatory, the volume is against us. The volume is so much larger in ambulatory, and we do have to turn around that revenue quicker. So I think we need to make sure the physician, like I said, has 15, 30 minutes to address the patient, and we don't really want it on the chart unless the physician has addressed it with the patient. Now, again, could this have been addressed by a telephone call with a nurse or through telehealth or something like that? Yeah, and maybe the physician just follows up later on it. But we just don't have a lot of turnaround time in ambulatory, not quite as much as they do in inpatient. Of course, coding accuracy, that's something we have to bring in. And then clinician engagement. And that's the one I think that opens probably the biggest can of worms, let's say, is what does clinician engagement look like? It doesn't look like you have to agree with me 100% of the time, right? However, if you're not, if you're disagreeing with a CDS, you know, 80% of the time, then we have a problem. Either the CDS is not asking the right question or the physician's just ignoring us, right? So those metrics do have to be followed. I often tell folks, instead of putting a KPI on it, just trend it. Trend it, and then you can see where you drive your education, because it may be like we were talking about the upcoding or downcoding or undercoding. It may just be that they don't know, that you could just say, hey, let me educate you on how this should be coded because I've noticed XYZ, right? So what you'll notice is I'm not advocating for the query rate. I think we're beyond that now. I really do. I think it's something that we can watch for. We can look at, but I don't think it's something that we just place a value on and say, here's what the expectation is, because it may not be. You may have one CDS covering a clinic that has great documentation, and maybe they have a lower, query rate, and maybe that's accurate. So I think QA is something that has to be added in there as well. So those quality accuracy for the CDI specialist. Are they asking the right questions? Are they doing the right thing? And so, of course, for value-based care, I would be remiss if I didn't say, of course, we're going to look at risk score accuracy. It's not something we throw out there to our physicians, I wouldn't suggest. But again, on a financial level, your organization will be looking at those RAF scores, because that does equate to how they negotiate those value-based care contracts.
Absolutely. We have just about run out of time, but I did have one final theoretical question that I'm going to just, it's more philosophical. If you could change one thing about outpatient documentation, how we approach it today, what would it be?
One thing. Okay. I struggle with this a bit because, you know, there's a lot of things, not really. I think we do a great job. I think the industry has done a great job. There's just, it's hard to keep up with the rules and regulations. So I think we need to shift our mindset from, this is billing and coding. I can't tell you the amount of times I've been called a coder, which is just, it's coding and CDI is different, right? I think there is a place for coding in CDI and there's a place for CDI in coding, but they are different tasks. So I think really we need to learn to connect the clinical picture and shift our mindset from, oh, this is just for revenue. And I hear it all the time. A physician will get mad. Well, all you care about is revenue. No, we don't even talk about revenue. We want to talk about reflecting the patient care. And I think when clinicians think of documentation integrity as part of the care they provide, the accuracy and compliance, again, will naturally follow. We've said this for years, but I truly believe that. And this doesn't mean that they need to know all the rules, right? That's what we're here for. I think that is job security. We would never expect a physician to know the coding guidelines or to know all the rules and regulations for querying or all the rules and regulations for Medicare or Medicare Advantage. We just don't expect that. That's why we have a team of people in organizations and you know, with ACTIS learning all of this and trying to teach all of this. So I think they need to look at CDI as part of a care team. And I know I've said that for several years, so I'll just end with that, Rebecca. I think CDI needs to be truly recognized as part of the patient care team, not patient-facing, but physician-facing.
I love that. That's a perfect way to wrap up this conversation. Jessica, thank you so much. I have very much enjoyed having you on the podcast today and hope that this is the first of many times we get to talk and have you on the podcast.
Oh, thank you, Rebecca. I appreciate your time. And yeah, it's been fun. We'll do it again soon.
As always, if our audience has any questions about this topic, you can feel free to email the ACTIS team at info@actis.org. We will also put that email in today's show notes, which are available on the show page at actis.org, and in your podcast app, so you can grab it from there. And now for something completely different, the ACTIS update, which is our segment telling you everything that's going on inside your association. So firstly, I want to let you know that the deadline is looming for the salary survey. So that deadline is coming up October 24th. You can find the link to take the survey in the show notes. And I want to just really encourage everybody to go ahead and fill out this survey. It doesn't take that long, and it is so incredibly important. This is one of ACTIS's seminal surveys. We really think of the salary survey and the CDI Week industry surveys as our two big surveys of the year where we get the most data and analysis for the industry that you can use. And we know that ACTIS members use the data in this annual report to do a lot of things, whether that's arguing for salary raises, perhaps looking at new titles, providing justification for hiring new staff, even new non-monetary benefits to improve employee satisfaction and things like that. And this year's survey it's really interesting. And we have, obviously, we have the basic questions of related to salary. But this year, we're also asking about job titles so we can really see what the job titles are across the nation, hiring plans, non-salary benefits, remote work, unionization, AI's impact on FTE needs, staffing numbers, even required credentials for CDI professionals, raises, promotions, and all of that. So please, this report is so useful for everyone, and it gets better and more useful the more people who take it. You do not need to be an ACTIS member to take the survey, so please forward the link to everyone on your team. And this is such a valuable benefit for ACTIS members to get that report, and you can use the information contained in that for so many things. So remember, the deadline for filling out that survey is October 24th. I did also want to bring up that we do have the ACTIS Annual Scholarship Program that is currently open. You can apply for this scholarship through November 23rd. So you still have quite a while. So please do pass the word on, you know, forward it around. This is an incredible opportunity for folks to apply for the scholarship. It is only once a year. And so we have four scholarships available. We have the Introduction to CDI Scholarship, which provides a one-year ACTIS membership plus enrollment in the CDI Apprenticeship Program. We have our Professional Development Scholarship, which provides an online bootcamp of the recipient's choice. We also have what we call our Pre-Conference Scholarship, which is a free registration to either the ACTIS Symposium Outpatient CDI or the Physician Advisor Forum, so the winner can choose between those. And then finally, we have our Melissa Varnavis Scholarship, which provides free registration to the ACTIS National Conference for the scholarship winner. So you can go ahead and apply for the scholarships right now up until November 23rd. That's mostly my updates, but I did want to say, we do have our final quarterly member call on November 20th, so mark your calendars now. You can sign up for that if you weren't already signed up for the year series at the quarterly member call page on ACTIS.org. And of course, all of the links will be in the show notes for today's episode. And before I close us out, reminder, you can get 0.5 ACTIS CEUs with this episode, but you must listen to the show in the first few days after publication. To receive your 0.5 CEU, you have to listen to the podcast in its entirety. At the end of the video, like all the way at the end when it gets to zero, that is when the CEU link evaluation will appear. You do have to take the evaluation before you can claim your certificate, which gets automatically emailed to you. And don't worry, those instructions are also on the show page. And as a reminder, we do recommend you use your personal email because those certificates can get caught in organizations' spam filters. The cutoff for today's episode is Sunday, October 12th at 11 p.m. Eastern. So that's October 12th. That's this Sunday at 11 p.m. Eastern. After that, the CEU period does close. But never fear, you can still listen to all the episodes of the Actors Podcast. So if there's an interesting one that you missed, you can still go back and listen to it. You just won't be able to claim CEUs. And then if you want to get the next CEUs, we will have a brand new episode in 2 weeks. These episodes come around just like clockwork. So our next episode is Wednesday, October 22nd. It will be hosted by Carla Kozak and feature a discussion about malnutrition quality improvement. If you want to make sure you never miss an episode, a simple way is to make sure you're subscribed to our free weekly newsletter, CDI Strategies, which always includes a link to the episode when it becomes available. And you can listen to the show anytime on either the Actis website, or you can listen via Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever your favorite podcast app may be. And all the links we discussed during today's episode will be available in the show notes. As always, we really do appreciate it if you take a minute to leave us a 5-star review on your podcast app, because that will help others find it. Our intro and outro music is Media Noche by D. Yankee, and our ad music is Take Me Higher by Jazzar, both obtained from the Free Music Archive. If you have suggestions for future guests or topics, we would absolutely love to hear them. You can send them to us at info@actors.org. And with that, we have wrapped up our episode. So cheerio, have a great day, and we will talk to you soon.